whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, real quick, text message. Because I said the Chargers are a very run-heavy team, which is true. It's a Jim Harbaugh team. Not sure if you noticed, J.J. McCarthy, the 10th pick or 11th pick, whatever he was in the draft, Heisman finalist, he probably could have had much bigger numbers at Michigan had they not just run the football 80% of the time.
Yeah.
He's kind of taken that, not to the extreme degree he did at Michigan, but he's taken that with the Chargers. Someone texts in, run heavy. Every highlight is Herbert throwing the ball deep. Yeah, that's because on highlight packages, it's not real sexy to show them handing it to J.K. Dobbins for a six-yard gain.
That's how highlights tend to work. Now, but I understand that. I understand that because this is the thing. Okay, so I did a preview on my YouTube channel where I very specifically was trying to make the point that I'm an idiot for even trying this. I was trying to make the point that in some ways, Herbert's operated like a game manager, and that's why the stats don't reflect how good he is. And I even put in captions under it. Because I know on my YouTube channel, I'm going to get the opposing teams. Trying to be a given honest assessment of it. I specifically said, to be clear, he's not a game manager, but he's had to manage the games.
Yeah.
Partly because of the way Jim Harbaugh operates. Partly because his wide receiving core, you know, this is not Keenan Allen, Mike Williams. Like, it's not. It's Ladd McConkey, who came along and developed really well as a rookie. But they've kind of had to operate in such a way that his numbers look like a game manager, even though he's way better than a game manager. I just got lambasted by angry Chargers fans, and I even said the GM word.
I'm impressed that the Chargers have angry fans.
Yeah, good
Every
for them.
Every game I've watched in that stadium, it just looks like just a bunch of tourists in there who got free tickets to paper the place.
So they're a lot like a – in some respects, you think of the old Bill O'Brien teams where – they ran the ball a lot, even though they weren't necessarily great at it. It was just his methodology. The thing the Chargers do well is they run the ball a lot, but they also effectively use it to set up play action. Yeah. And then you've got Justin freaking Herbert throwing the ball on some of those play action. Yeah, he still makes incredible throws. It's as far as the Texans facing the Chargers, I'm not as worried about the Chargers' run game specifically. I am worried about guys biting on the run and then letting up some of these huge chunk plays that they've given up through the course of the season.
Yeah, I think this is where you hope getting your full complement of linebackers. The front seven as a whole is healthy now.
Yeah.
You got your full set of starting linebackers with Foley Fatakasi back. You've got your whole rotation on the interior, and you've got your beasts on the outside as well. And I think the hope is that, yeah, they're going to try to run the football, but like you've done to some other teams in your stadium, you get them in 2nd and 10 and 3rd and 11, and then you're able to kind of pin your ears back a little bit. And yeah. Justin Herbert is not good under pressure. That is he's a tremendous talent, and I think he's underrated using his legs. He's got a rifle for an arm. He's really good. To the texter's point, there's a reason why there's a bunch of highlights of Herbert throwing the ball deep. He's really good at it. And his receivers, I think this receiving core is better than people thought it was going to be this year, with Quentin Johnston coming around, with Ladd McConkey having the rookie year that he had. They've got some other good pieces in that passing game. But he's bad under pressure. His EPA, his success rate, just purely his passer rating, his 72 passer rating when under pressure. All the picks, all three of them, he's thrown this year, all while he's been under pressure. So I'm optimistic. I think the key is stopping that run and then putting it in situations where they're a little more predictable.
Yeah. You know? Now, I think the other part of it, too, is that he hasn't been effective under pressure. But I think part of that, again, going back to managing the game, like the way good quarterbacks do, the veteran quarterbacks, Tom Brady at times, a lot of times, had to operate like a game manager. So it's not an insult. But I think he's been very careful about the risks he takes when he's under pressure. So he's not afraid to throw the ball away. Mm-hmm. I almost feel a sentiment where because people have been watching all these highlights, they feel like, oh no, this is an unstoppable force. No, they are what they are. Just like the Texans, they're a wild card playoff team. I think they're a better team, looking at the sum total of the season than the Texans have been. But there's a reason that at the very least, this is a field goal margin in the spread right now.
Yep.
So, no, they're not an unstoppable force. They've just done some things really well, especially compared to how they've been operating the last couple of years.
They're very unlike past Charger. I don't feel like I don't feel like there's a they're going to find a way to lose this game element of the Chargers.
I feel like they've got an advantage now in the fourth quarter because of Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, they ain't coughing up a 27-0 lead anymore like they did against the Jags 2 years ago in the playoffs.
Even though Jim Harbaugh and John Harbaugh, I was looking at some nerdy article yesterday, where basically they decide whether a coach was right to go for it on fourth down or not.
Oh, yeah.
Which
I
is
like
where
those.
I get old school meatheadish with some of that. I do feel like some of the people looking at their spreadsheets don't really take into account.
Was it the one where they like call it the cowardly index?
They weren't citing that. It was more sciencey than that.
Oh, okay,
so
sounds amazing.
This guy who wrote the article actually he basically made that same point I just did. And this is an actual nerdy dude, but it's never as clear cut as like, oh yeah, it was definitely 63% better to go for it there than not. But anyway. Jim Harbaugh and John Harbaugh were right at the bottom of the list when it comes to making the quote-unquote appropriate decision on fourth down, which means that they were kicking field goals or punting a lot more on fourth down.
Oh, they're more concerned. They're more old school.
You know, the sad heads want you to be Dan Campbell or anybody else, and I appreciate that. Like, I think, more coaches should be more aggressive, but when it comes down to managing the game in the fourth quarter, even with John Harbaugh kind of being classically more conservative on fourth downs and everything, I think he's still I don't think that he's going to succumb to the Chargers curse.
Yeah.
He's just a good football coach.
Yeah. Do you like going against coaches that are more aggressive or love? Like, I hear that and I'm like, oh, good. If the Texans if they just get him to fourth down, they're getting the ball back. That's great. You know?
Against this Texans team, I'd actually prefer the hyper aggressive type.
Okay.
You might
get some short fields.
Yeah. Because I don't know. Yeah. I don't. This Texans offense has needed those short fields.
Yeah.
I don't. Okay.
Yeah. That's
Harbaugh
true.
Punting doesn't do it for me.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, this offense might be able to drive the ball 80 yards.
Going 85 yards down the field on 13 plays.
Without once screwing themselves or shooting themselves in the foot. Yeah.
You don't see that 13 play parlay working out?
Yeah, right.
On an 85 yard drive.
Right, so I would prefer that he just lets his freak flag fly.
No, that's a good point. It's a good way to look at it. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Let's get into this. Nick Caserio was on with us yesterday. Good conversation. It's up on the podcast. Nick did the usual 40 to 45 minutes with us. We always appreciate his time. This was right out of the chute. This was the answer to the first question I asked him, just general vibes. How you feeling about the team going into the playoffs?
Vibe check. That's what you said.
Vibe check. Yep, vibe check. Here's what Nick Caserio had to say.
Yeah, definitely appreciated the opportunity. I think when you kind of turn the page and you get through the regular season, to have your team in a position to compete when you're playing meaningful football in December and January, it carries a certain weight along with it. So everybody's excited about the opportunity in front of us. We had a great sort of first day of preparation, first day of work. We were actually out there on a field yesterday practicing on a Tuesday, which isn't normal, but the fact that the game is Sunday, we've kind of structured the schedule, and what we've found is when we work, we play good football. So the players were focused, the players had the right mindset. It's not easy because you come off the heels of a Sunday game and you got to kind of turn the page, but everybody understands what's in front of us and the awareness is heightened and everybody's excited about the opportunity in front of us against a good Los Angeles team that's coming in here on Saturday.
Okay, if we were transcribing that quote right there, I almost feel like the word work would have been in a bigger font in bold, just in his voice. You know, when we work, we play well.
I know. So this is interesting because this is the way I took it in the moment. Because remember, I don't think that was the first question. That was the first conversation that Nick and I were having because we were talking about whatever it was. I was asking him basically about load management.
Well, you followed up to that one with the load management question.
Oh, okay,
question.
All right. The GPS tracking, all of that. Okay, so I followed up. Thank you for remembering my life better than I do. the thing about that is, I think that they've experimented, as I understand it, especially in the short weeks and things like that, they've experimented a little bit on like how much to practice, when to lay off, and it's not, I didn't take it, just given that I'd been told that before. When he said that, I didn't take it as like, oh, the guys themselves are working hard or not. I think that because what Nick and I ended up talking about was, all right, there's times where you look at all this GPS data, how healthy are guys, do they need rest and everything? You got to balance that out with, all right, we also do need to practice. And at times, all right, look, we're going to do 9-on-7 drill. We're going to do some of the more physical stuff, even though it's late in the year. That's how I took it. I think it was more a matter of, all right, are we going to... So everybody, before you like start thinking this is a new age versus old school, way before GPS tracking and everything, in the NFL, the standard is that as you get towards the end of the season, a lot of teams start basically having glorified walkthroughs. Mm-hmm. It's you're just trying to stay healthy as much as
especially
possible.
Especially with all these short weeks they
have. Yeah, even like I played for the old Tom Coughlin, not the nouveau happy joy Tom Coughlin with the Giants. Like even there, like as old school as he was, by the end of the season, you're really paring back on the physical work.
Yeah.
So that's how I took it with Nick. I think that it was, all right, you got to take the load management into account, but you also, you've got to work on things, especially with this offense. You got to get out there and practice and get some reps. I didn't look at it as like, well, these guys aren't working hard or anything like that.
It's interesting. They talked about this. I was listening to The Drive yesterday, and they talked about this in the very first segment of their show. They talked about our interview with Nick. They had very nice things to say about it. We appreciate you, Clint and Ron. And Clint said there was one thing that stood out to him early on in the interview, and it was that cut we just played from Nick, which again, where he really stressed, when we work, we play well. I think Clint was taking it differently than what you were just talking about. Now, here's what it sounded like yesterday on The Drive.
You heard him there, Clint. You said when we work, damn it, we play well. What he said. Now, Clint's fingers are, if you can't probably see it, the camera that low on YouTube, but yeah. Clint's fingers are banging a little bit on the table ever so slightly. What jumped out when you heard that part of the interview?
You tell me when you hear general manager or head coach in week 19 of the season, we know when we work, we play well. We play good football. I'm sorry. When we work, we play good football. Tyler, you're a huge Texans fan. You cover a little closer than most folks, so I think there's a good straddle there of what do you hear right there? You tell me.
That tells me on the front end, and just so everybody knows, me and you haven't even talked about this, Clint, so I hope I'm right. But it tells me, hey, there's possibly been some weeks this season, this football season, where the proper work has not been put in. Is that what you're feeling?
Absolutely.
With it?
Absolutely. 100%. When we work, we play good football. Yeah, like that the fact that we're at a spot where we like our good football is dependent on if and when we work and we work hard and we work detailed and we work well, the fact that we're there 2 years in, really it's obviously with Nick, it's 4 years, I think, but with D'Amico and this team, we've won 20 ball games in 2 years, and here we sit, and we're talking about when we work, we play good football. Now, yeah.
Okay, so this is what I feared in the moment when I was talking with Nick, when Nick and I were having that part of the conversation. Yeah. Whenever we have Nick on, I can feel like sometimes I feel like, okay, we're going down a road where this is just like Nick and I should be doing an hour-long
podcast
this versus like what people want to hear about the Chargers, people want to hear about Bobby Slowick, all that stuff. I kind of, when he framed it that way, I took it the way I did, which was I think this is about load management and how much you practice, all that. But I could see where people would hear that and think the opposite, what Clint thought. And I probably should have asked a follow-up to that part of it, but I kind of wanted to get moving along. So I was accurate in my fear that people would take that different ways.
I don't know
if Clint's correct or if I'm correct. That was just given the context of the conversation, I really felt it was more about load management.
Yeah.
That, like, all right, yeah, load management is great, but we got to get out there and practice at times.
Well, I just think I think too, you look at the nature of who the interview subject is. It's Nick Caserio. Nick Caserio is not somebody who's going to come on our show,
right,
and put something out there where it's a connotation that he's throwing the entire team's work ethic under the
bus. Yeah, that's a really good point.
When has he ever done that?
That's kind of not his standard operating procedure.
Like Nick.
He's not Antonio Pierce. Antonio Pierce will not be out there saying business decisions.
Or Mick Cronin, the coach at UCLA.
Oh, God.
We got him later at 8 o'clock.
Everybody stay tuned. This is some epic audio.
Yeah, it's amazing. But that's not Nick. Nick has been coming on this show for 4 years now to the day, four years, and not one time has he come on and thrown a player under the bus ever. So now all of a sudden, 3 days before the playoffs, he's going to come on and say something where he's throwing all 53 guys under the bus? No chance.
Yeah, I think, one of our listeners says they think Clint and Tyler are right on this one. Several other people agree with me. So this is, I think this is a classic situation of, man, people are, you're going to see it through your own filters. I don't.
Then this should be a headline everywhere. Nick Casario throws team under the bus. Yeah, like, yeah, why is Pro Football Talk not picking this up?
Yeah, I don't think that's what he was saying. Yeah. And I know because of, you know, because the guys that I know who are coaches in the NFL now, we're we're old men now. We're relics, and we love to think about how tough we were back in the day, all that crap. But most of the guys my age who are coaching will talk about this. Like, yeah, that GPS data is really, really good, but you got to remember, you got to figure out how to find the balance. Mm-hmm. You can't, in a football, which is the ultimate team sport, there's times where, like, you can't wait for everybody to be completely healthy and fresh. So you got to make decisions on the margins about, like, all right, we know we need to rest this guy, but we got to get out there and practice. And I think that my take on it was that looking over the course of the entire season, Nick probably realized that, all right, man, you know, just looking at the weeks where we were more aggressive in practice, where we were doing, I don't know, 9-on-7 drills and what have you, like all the more physical stuff, we tended to play well that week. Mm-hmm. And when we tried to be, you know, 3/4 speed jog throughs and everything, like a lot of teams do, going back decades upon decades, that we didn't play as well. So, and when you get to a point where you're a veteran team, especially on offense, you can get to a point where, I mean, that's a sign of a consummate professional football team.
Yeah.
Is when the guys are all good enough that you can go out there and get the mental reps, but not have to go full speed in practice. Mm-hmm. This offense clearly is not a highly polished offensive, a veteran juggernaut.
Right.
I think they need some of the physicality. And I think maybe the defense, even though they play really well, I think they kind of thrive on that. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's a reminder that, like, yeah, you get. I used to feel that way as a player. Even when I felt like crap, I almost didn't feel right when I didn't get a 9-on-7 drill in. Like, there were times where, and that's the way some coaches back in the day would operate, is like you'd have shoulder pads on for the first half of practice, and then you take them off after 9-on-7 drill.
Okay.
So you get that physicality, and you get that, you know, you get that part of the game in, but then you back off, and it's more mental work the rest of the day.
Yeah.
And I could see guys on this defense being like that. Like, you kind of... It's almost like 7 days is too long to wait to hit somebody again.
For these guys.
Yeah. It's good to just have that. And same way in a football game, sometimes, like, it's just, it feels so good if, as a defensive player, I loved it if the offense would open up with a run. Because then it's like, boom, you're in it. Like, it's a wake-up call. Yeah, like, you're just, it smashes any of the actual rational thought out of your brain, mm-hmm. and it just gets you in that primal mode.
Yeah, that's good. People weighing in on the text page, Clint is just old school. That is true. Clint is old school. Someone texts in throwaway comment. I don't think it was a throwaway comment at all. I just think it can be interpreted a couple of ways.
Yeah, no, I think because we were, if you listen to the whole conversation, it ended up being a lot about the analytics side of things, or really like the GPS tracking side of things.
Yeah, I actually thought your follow-up did clarify some of that.
Yeah.
You know, like it you're right.
That's true, because my follow-up, he ended up kind of being like, he got a little excited to talk about it.
I mean, your follow-up question was kind of, in a way, asking him to define what that meant with work.
You think he'll do a podcast with me in the off-season? Not an episode, an entire podcast series.
Oh, like a weekly with you
just
and
just like
him?
The guys in Indianapolis.
I would listen
to it. Just like
the
podcasting linebackers.
Hey, did you see that Zaire Franklin apologized to the fans of Indianapolis?
Oh,
yeah, hang on. I've got the tweet.
Nice.
I've got it in the rundown.
Zaire Franklin, linebacker for the Colts, for those of you who don't know who he is. And he and EJ Speed, his fellow linebacker, have a hit. It is actually a really good podcast.
It's a good podcast.
But it's a little too good for an in-season podcast on a bad football team.
On a bad football team is the key. Like, because Travis Kelce does his podcast with his brother all season long. And they're winning games. Nobody cares. They got $100 million for the damn thing.
Yeah. Well, and Travis Kelce, plus he has the benefit of being so old that people aren't blaming the podcast for why Travis Kelce is starting to decline. So.
Yeah.
Plus, I wish I hadn't even said that, because we know what happens when Travis Kelce doesn't quite look like himself in the regular season.
Gets 11 catches.
Yeah.
Texans can
be
playing.
And in the playoffs, we see. Yeah,
2 weeks.
Yeah.
Zaire Franklin said, "Indy fans, listen, I made some mistakes. I let some things get to me that they shouldn't and did some things I wish I could take back. But understand, my heart was always right, and I'm going to learn and be better because of it." Then you got to cancel your podcast, bro.
I don't. I get content out of there sometimes.
I don't want him to. I'm just saying, like, if you're going to fulfill that promise to the fans.
I'll tell you what, the offseason, I guess, air quotes, battling between that podcast and CJ Stroud, because they were kind of trading barbs with each other.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think either of those sides, I don't think CJ... or Zaire Franklin or EJ Speed has any appetite for that this offseason.
Radio silence, man. Yeah.
They're going to say nothing but gushing praise about all three.
If they talk.
EJ's friends with CJ.
Yeah.
So that they'll talk, but I don't think publicly.
Oh, I meant publicly. Yeah, I meant publicly. So the Texans and Chargers this weekend, I was looking at some trends. I'm going to credit Middle Screen with this first one. He sent an email to my podcast for the mailbag, the Utopia Football Podcast. Tell me if this matters, Seth. Texans on short weeks and long weeks. I was startled by this. The season since week 9, like it was a normal season for the first 8 weeks. You know, it was just noon Sunday, a Sunday night game with the Bears, and then noon Sunday. Like through 8 weeks, it was all Sunday games, most of them at noon. And then the schedule in week 9 just got drunk, and it was drunk for the rest of the season. You know, the Jets on Halloween night, 3 primetime games in 3 weeks, a Thursday, a Sunday, and a Monday. So you had a bunch of short weeks in there. Your bye week is until week 14. You got 3 games in 11 days. The last one is on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
Like all these weird things. But Middle Screen actually went and did the legwork on this. Does this matter? Because it's a short week for the Texans.
Yeah.
They are 0-4 in games played on short weeks this year. And by the way, some of the, like, they lost to the Jets on the short week and unraveled in the second half of that game, by the way. They lost to the Titans on a short week at home. And then the Kansas City and Baltimore games were both on short. You know, Kansas City was a Sunday, Saturday, and then the Baltimore game was a Saturday, Wednesday. Some of their either most embarrassing or worst performances of the year have come on short weeks. Meanwhile, on long weeks, Detroit, Dallas, Miami, Tennessee, they're 3-1 in those games, and those were 4 of their more impressive games of the season.
I think, okay, if I were going to make a knee-jerk explanation for that, which is impossible to really figure out why that is, like why those performances, especially the Jets game especially, like that's a dismal performance versus a bad football team. I think that even though they've done some really good things defensively, they still are a young defense. Like they're like Kalen Bullock and Kamari Lassiter, we couldn't be more excited about those guys. They're still young players.
Stingley's still young. He's in year 3.
And I think that it might be kind of from our perspectives. Yeah, this is where it's all showing that we were a little overly aggressive and thinking like, oh, it's a nice straight line upward in development. You had a promising first year, and then there you go. So as far as the whole team goes,
yeah.
I think they're a team that probably, like we were talking about earlier, a really truly veteran team. They don't need the practice as much because they know how to take the mental reps, and they know how to work on their technique without being physical. This is still a really young football team in a lot of respects, offensively and defensively. And that maybe they really do. Like Nick said, when Nick said we were better when we work, I did not think that was a shade at the players who weren't working hard at all. I think that was more like, yeah, we need the practice. Like, we just got to get out there. It's old school, get reps. And when we play better when we do that. So in those shorter weeks,
maybe that fulfills that.
Yeah. And especially if they do try to load manage in those weeks, then maybe it's a double whammy for a young football
team. And unfortunately, it shows up in poor play in those short weeks. Yeah.
They've got plenty of good veteran players, older players, especially on defense, but you still have, you got so much youth on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, I don't think it's an accident that in that period of Sunday, Saturday, Wednesday at Christmas time, where the Saturday, Wednesday part involved 4 teams, the Steelers, Texans, Chiefs, and Ravens. I don't think it's an accident that the 2 teams that went 2-0 in those games were the Ravens and the Chiefs.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They can manage it. They're veteran teams.
And then that's the classic, too, especially with the Chiefs. All right, a quarterback that's not having one of his better statistical seasons, but when it comes down to the fourth quarter, those crunch time situations, they know how to operate.
Yeah.
And I think that's where this will be something that you can feel good about in the offseason more so than right now. That defense, I think, to put it really simply, one of the things that's keeping them from being a genuinely elite defense is just the fact that they are so young. I mean, Will Anderson is still just a second-year player. Henry Toa, who ends up being one of the main guys this year, second-year player. Kamari Lassiter, rookie. Kalen Bullock, rookie. Derek Stingley, third-year player. Like, they're still a young team with a lot of their key players. And then offensively, it's just, I mean, that's a whole different, we can go down a list of various things that you hope improves. Yeah. But yeah, there is, when I go and talk to people outside of Houston, it's a good reality check for me, or a perspective check sometimes, where Greg Rosenthal was saying this to me the other day. He was like, well, I mean, You guys were in 2020 through 2022. Those were dark times. And you're
dark
sitting
times.
Here. Yeah, you're sitting here. It's a year two of a rebuild from a really, really dark period that, you know, when you step back and look at it, okay, yeah, there's still a lot of work to do. But they have come a long way. But to be a genuinely elite team, they've got work to do. Some players, veteran or rookies, that need to be replaced, whatever. But the sum total of it is, yeah, they need that work on the practice field.
Yes, yes. Texans on primetime / national TV this year, 2-4. Does that matter to you that this is the big stage they've got to themselves, a game everybody's watching? The two wins this year were a win against Chicago that was probably closer than it should have been in week two, and then the Dallas game where they started rolling up Dallas in Jerry World. It took them much longer than it took the four teams that played the Cowboys before them.
Right. I think that's part of why, even though the Texans are only 3-point underdogs, that people are acting like this is a... I think people nationally feel like, oh, no, I've seen the Texans. Yeah, nah, whatever. They don't take them seriously because of that. And, you know, the extreme example of that was the year Tampa won the Super Bowl, where people were looking at the... Remember, Brady performed really poorly in primetime games?
Yes.
And you're like, you look at the sum total of the season, and like, no, he's actually playing really well. Mm-hmm. It's just he had a few bad moments or bad games in primetime games. That's the extreme example.
Yeah.
The Texans, I think, are on the... On the sum total of it all, they're a better team than they've showed in those primetime games.
Yeah.
But if the primetime part is a factor, yeah, like 3:30 on a Saturday is primetime when it's a playoff game. It's a nationally televised game.
Yeah, like I look at the Kansas City and Baltimore games. Those were, by my definition, primetime games because you had the stage to yourself. And no other games are going. Everybody's watching football, and they're going to watch you.
That's where, and part of that, again, going back to the youth, I mean, yeah, some of that might just be as simple as there's a little bit of a peeing down the leg factor when it comes to playing on a big stage when you have that many young guys on the team. I mean, the whole, you know, when like, especially back in the day before they changed training in the military, like, and especially when you're using like volunteers in World War II and everything, who had like 6 weeks of basic training, and then here's a machine gun. Their first time in combat, they're spraying bullets all over the place. You know, like there's. That's when they realized, like, okay, we got to change the way we train and approach things and everything.
Show these guys how to use this gun.
Yeah. Well, no, but there's an element, like, you can be an awesome marksman, but you get into live fire, and that's a different deal.
Oh, yeah.
And I think there's a little bit of that element with the Texans.
They're
just pulling the trigger down and spraying bullets off into the air because they're not quite ready for fight time.
Specialize a little bit. Yeah. Text message. I think if you all keep it up, I love when a text leads in with that. It implies we're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
I think if you all keep it up, the GM isn't going to want to come on y'all's show anymore. If you take a random statement and try and construe it each and every which way to meet a narrative, he's going to be a lot less likely to give you good info in an interview. Nick's been doing this for 4 years. We've taken so many things that he said and run with it before. He likes coming on the show. I'm worried zero about that.
Well, plus, you and I... As far as him coming on this show, like, you and I are, like, basically defending him here. Like, I thought it was a really good point.
Yeah.
And a very nuanced, that is the problem. Okay.
Well, and the tech, to be fair to the texter, he may very well be talking about the station taking it and running with it, you know, that kind of thing. If y'all could mean Clinton Ron also, too. It's
I know that's
pronouns.
That's where the pronouns get, and I would include in that when people say everybody or everyone.
Well, that's just annoying.
I made a comment the other day about, like, specifically, my point was that Justin Herbert is not a game manager, but because I use the phrase game manager, oh my gosh, all these Chargers fans are like,
door.
Every Texans fan is saying that Justin Herbert is just a game manager. Like, what the hell are you talking about? My specific point was that he's not a game manager.
I like when we're on a topic and somebody texts in like, we would like to hear more about some other topic.
Yeah.
And I always like to picture that person sitting in an amphitheater somewhere with like 300 other people listening to Payne and Pendergast.
Yeah.
Because they're using the word we. I'm like, we, you're speaking for the audience right now, sir, while you're in your car? Or are you in an amphitheater? Are you at a Payne and Pendergast listening party at like a Shipley somewhere right now? Yeah.
I was in college once. I was my psychology professor, my Psych 101 professor was just this world-renowned sleep researcher, but he was also just an awesome professor. Like he gave great lectures. So his class was always very well attended, but there's one time that he kind of told everybody in class, like, listen, don't tell anybody this, but we got a big surprise guest speaker coming up next week. Okay, so just be sure you're in class on Monday or Wednesday, whatever it is. So of course, and this class was so popular, it was in a big 2,000 person amphitheater, theater,
yep,
or hall. It's jam packed with a bunch of people who aren't even in the class, and it was a little bit of a letdown because it was a big name, but it was Peter, Paul, and Mary, the band, yeah. So like they showed up, and which was all right, cool. Like it was nice. I enjoyed it, but. It's Peter, Paul, and Mary. There's 2,000 people in there, and they're having like some long discussion about mental health or something. And my friend Dave Raquel, who was not enrolled in the class, and I actually didn't even know he was in there, but I recognized his voice. Like midway through, like Peter or Paul, one of those two, was in the middle of answering a question about something, and he goes, "Blade Puff the Magic Dragon." And I feel like he spoke for everybody.
Right. No,
I was like, at some point, can I hear Puff the Magic Dragon?
No, they, Peter, Paul, and Mary were like those bands I was talking about last week that are playing their new album. We don't want to hear your new album.
Yeah.
We don't hear your thoughts on mental health. We want to hear Puff the Magic Dragon. Now he lived by the sea. That's hilarious.
Dave Rickle. Sorry, I said Rickle.
What happened?
It's pronounced Rickle, by the way, but I'm so devastated that I've been mispronouncing Bullock for so long. Now I'm emphasizing everything they're on.
What happened after he yelled
that? I think
they
did end up playing Puff the Magic Dragon.
They should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, plus we're in an age, too, where that was still more. Now it feels like ancient history. But when we were kids, that song was playing on the radio all the time.
Oh, yeah. I feel like that was a song that they played, like, in our classrooms, too.
You know? Right. Even, without even realizing that it was definitely about smoking
about weed
or something.
Yeah. About puffing the magic dragon. Yeah.
That was a fun era of music where, like, bands like the Beatles would have to act like, no, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds is not about LSD.
Totally. It's, Lucy, look up in the sky. It's right there.
And then people believed it.
Yeah.
Because there was, I believed it when I'd read that. I'd read some John Lennon quote. We're like, oh, okay. It wasn't about LSD at all.
Did you see in one of my People Magazine newsletter updates I get each day? Peter died of Peter, Paul, and Mary. Passed away this week. Age 86.
He played Puff the Magic Dragon for me. You want to hear the story? No, I just... want to just hold. but Dave would go on to be a bigwig at Waffle House.
Oh, yeah?
A bigwig at Waffle House.
Like he managed one?
Starting off.
Yeah.
Yeah, he got his business degree from Cornell. And everybody was wondering, like, we thought he was joking because he was like, he was a class clown type, but also like a very good student and everything. Yeah. And we were wondering, like, you know, like, oh, this guy's probably going to go off and work on Wall Street or something. He went down to work at the Olympics, the Atlanta Olympics. Like the his spring of his junior year.
96.
Or spring or summer
of
his junior year.
1996, yeah.
And when he was down there, he ended up he was really impressed with Waffle House. I don't think he'd ever been to one. And he started talking to the manager. And he ended up taking a job right out of college as a manager at, an assistant manager at a Waffle House.
With the idea that he was going to...
No, I think he liked the business model, yep. Which it is. It's a really interesting business model and just like the operation itself.
Yeah.
So he did. Yeah, no, and he just kind of rose through the ranks. And he's this kid. He's so... I can't remember if he's from New Jersey or Connecticut, but he's very Northeastern.
Yeah.
So, like, I could see them, like, looking at him like, oh, this guy's going to shake things up a little bit.
Right.
Like, he just operates on a different wavelength than the rest of us because that is a Southern corporation.
Big time.
Yeah. And he ended up being a pretty high up in the organization by the time he was 30 or
really?
So. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, but he started out, like, the first year or two, he was just working at a Waffle House.
So he didn't start working at the Waffle House with the idea that, like, he was going to be an executive or that he was going to start. I've seen this before.
Yeah.
I'm going to get in and like a buddy of mine, one of my old roommates in college, his younger brother, they're from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And they both went to Notre Dame and he wanted to start a Permane Brothers knockoff in Chicago right near Wrigley Field.
Uh-huh.
And so he went back home after all his buddies at Notre Dame are going to law school or were pre-med or they're getting jobs on Wall Street. He's working as an assistant manager in a Permane Brothers back in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
So he can learn the business, take that recipe, and then it wasn't a franchise. They called it Lucky's, but it was a knockoff of Permane
basically,
Brothers.
You know what it is, especially back in the day where you couldn't find this stuff on the internet, it was getting the operating manual.
Yeah.
I knew another guy in the restaurant industry who, when he was like fresh out of college, he and some of his buddies basically stole the operating manual from Waffle House and started their own little waffle chain.
That's what I was wondering if your boy was doing.
Like five or six restaurants, like as young guys,
yeah,
because they just followed the operating manual to a T.
That's what this
no,
was.
No, that wasn't his plan.
Okay.
No, Rickle.
He just
was,
liked working at the Waffle House.
He was an awesome guy. I mean, still is, but he was just he was what every young college kid would aspire to be, which was partied his ass off, but like also was a football player and worked his ass off, but also got like a 4.0.
What's his
GPA.
Name?
Dave Rickle.
He's my new favorite out of your childhood / college friends that I've never met before.
Better than Farragher?
He just passed Farragher's number
Rickle
two.
Rickle isn't good buds with Dave Matthews.
That's all right. I'm not a huge Dave Matthews fan.
Oh, okay. That's good. Yeah.
If anything, that Dave
I
Matthews.
I told Dave Matthews that when I met him.
And Dave Matthews was like, God, I love your show. That really disappoints me.
I'll be honest with you, Seth. I listen for Sean more than you.
I listen on the Odyssey app.
That'd be awesome if in some random interview, Dave Matthews is like, you know, I met a guy at a party 7 years ago. And they ask him how he spends his time. Every morning I listen to Pain and Pendergast in Houston for 4 hours.
That would be amazing. I don't hate Dave Matthews. It's not like one of my tippy top. I've been to a few Dave Matthews band shows. Here's what I don't like real quick. I'm not big into the like jam sessions.
Stuff, yeah.
Like, man, I'm like, get to the, we've been doing this for 10 minutes now.
Yeah. I got to wait for you to get there, Sean, but it takes... there's a reason I listen to... There's a period in my life where I listen to a lot more Rusted Root than I have any time since.
I understand the nuance behind it. I'm not in that state of mind.
You know, the cool thing about Dave Matthews was that when I met him, I actually had... I was trying not to sound like a fanboy on this. Yeah. It wasn't like I was like, oh my God, Dave Matthews or anything. But one of the songs that I would listen to pregame, I realized like early in my career, I had to set aside the Metallica and Megadeth and stuff because I got a tendency, some of you might be surprised by this, to get a little too amped up.
Oh, unhinged perhaps?
Yeah, to the point where I'm like burning energy that doesn't need to be burned.
Yeah.
So I started to kind of listen to stuff more that like I visualized a lot. Yeah. I think that's how I was able to make it in the NFL without being a very good athlete at all, was I would just do mental reps all day long.
Yeah.
So Dave Matthews' song, Two Step, mm-hmm, there's something about that song and the beat and everything that just kind of like got me into the right frame of mind to where I could visualize. And I would listen to, like before an NFL game, after I set aside the Metallica and everything, I would listen to like Dave Matthews' Two Step for like 20 minutes and just visualize.
Does he know that?
The whole thing. Yeah, I told him that night. Yeah, but I was trying to like, I want to tell this story, but I don't want to.
Fanboy.
Yeah. But the thing that put it over into where he's like, oh, okay, this isn't just some annoying fanboy or whatever, was that I told him that the reason I liked that song was because at the time I was reading this book by Richard Feynman, a physicist, and it was all about kind of like rhythm and like, because he's a physicist, all wave theory and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And he played the bongos. Richard Feynman was a Nobel Prize winning physicist who was super into the
Love
bongos.
The bongos, yeah.
So I told Dave Matthews, that was kind of where I started thinking about things differently, like trying to tap into the rhythm of things.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, Richard Feynman? Yes, I love him.
Oh, no way.
He's like, oh my God, I'm so flattered that you would mention me in the same breath as Richard Feynman.
You guys were fanboys for the same physicist.
Yeah, yes,
the same bongo-playing physicist.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That is amazing. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Arian Foster, how did it come about that Arian Foster is leading the squad onto the field this Sunday? He talked about it on his podcast yesterday. We'll hear from Arian Foster coming up next.